morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Direct Line Q3 trading update. My name is Courtney, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If you need assistance at any time, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you will be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to your host, Paul Geddes, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Q3 update. As usual, I'm joined by John Risenstein and other members of my management team. Hopefully, you've all had a chance to read through our trading update and have your questions ready. Overall, we're pleased with how we traded this quarter, having maintained the strong momentum across our own brand portfolio and another great quarter for our Direct Line brand in terms of both policy count and premium growth. We also made progress against the many initiatives that I set out at the half year. And this trading update, I think, reminds you of the value of having strong brands, propositions, and customer relationships. And this has enabled us to deliver good value for our customers and good returns for shareholders. So onto the headlines. We delivered policy growth in our own brands across motor, home, commercial, direct, and rescue. And we're really pleased with the 5.1% increase, or a third of a million additional policies. And again, much of this growth was driven by our Direct Line brand. We maintained strong momentum in motor, growing our own brand policies by 5.5% year to date at good loss ratios. In home, we're encouraged the actions we've taken on the scape of water across pricing, claims, and underwriting have started to show a positive impact, albeit it's still early days. And overall, our continued momentum means that we are on track to deliver a full year combined operating ratio around the middle of the 93 to 95 target, still assuming normal annual weather. So now a few words on each of our business areas, starting with motor. We continue to grow policy count and premiums, particularly across own brands, as a result of the great momentum in Direct Line. Motor own brand policy count was 5.5% ahead of the same point last year, and Q3 premiums were 10% ahead. We saw some signs of the market prices starting to flatten in Q3 versus Q2, although they are still up strongly year on year. We're really pleased with how we traded, having achieved a good balance of growth at or above our target loss ratios. And this was helped by some favourable experience on claims frequency, which we're not banking as a trend. Moving on to home, as I mentioned up front, we're pleased that the actions we've taken to address escape of water claims inflation are beginning to bear fruit. These actions are taken across pricing, underwriting and claims, and have collectively had a positive impact on escape of water inflation. Against this backdrop, we traded well, growing policy count and premiums across our own brands. In home partners, we continue to see a reduction in policy count and premiums in line with historic trends. And a few words on weather. It's been another fairly benign quarter, so we're well below our weather event load, although it's still too early to bank this as a benefit. A reminder that our overall core guidance includes a normal annual home weather load of around £65 million. In rescue, it was another strong quarter for our Green Flag brand. At the end of Q3, in-force policies were 10% ahead of last year. Linked Rescue also achieved double-digit growth, helped by higher motor volumes and our Churchill promotion. And in our rescue partners, I'm delighted to announce that we've just agreed to renew our arrangement with Royal Bank of Scotland to continue to supply rescue services to its bank customers for another 5 years. Finally, commercial, which grew policy count and premiums in Q3. Policy count was 5.8% ahead of the same period last year, largely driven by the continued growth in Direct Line for Business, which was 8% ahead of prior year. Commercial premiums overall grew a little in Q3, as the great performance in Direct Line for Business was almost fully offset by lower premiums in NIG, where we continued to focus on returns. A few words now on costs and our ongoing investment across the business, as well as some perspective on the potential impairment we flagged in the statement. As you know, we're undertaking an extensive transformation agenda, investing in multiple initiatives and systems aimed at improving our customer experience, supporting our growth, and improving the efficiency of our business. The investment in systems spans policy, pricing, payment, and other related data and digital systems across the business. And as we said before, we expect to incur capital expenditure on average of around £80 to £100 million per year, up to and including 2019. For example, as you saw at the half year, Direct Line for Business successfully launched a leading new platform for small business customers, which is progressing well, and we're planning to roll out our next update around the end of the year, which will include bed and breakfasts. Overall, we've made good progress on our initiatives to improve our efficiency, and we're on track to deliver a better business-as-usual expense ratio, lower than last year's 24%. However, as can happen with this level of change, not everything has gone as we'd have liked, and we recently decided to rework some elements so as to give us the performance levels that we demand. As our impairment review is underway, this could lead to an impairment charge at the year-end somewhat higher than last year's level. Impairments, remember, are non-cash items and so have no impact on our capital position, but will impact the headline expense ratio. And finally, onto the outlook, where our strong performance in motor gives us confidence that even with that potential impairment, we can deliver around the middle of the combined operating ratio target of between 93 and 95%, still assuming the full annual weather load. We've made great progress on costs and are on track to reduce our business-as-usual expense and commission ratios. For investments, we increase our guidance from 2.4% to an income yield of 2.5% in 2017. Please note, we continue to expect assets under management to decline modestly. So in summary, we're pleased with how we've traded this quarter. We maintain the strong momentum across our own brand portfolio and particularly Direct Line. And with that, operator, we'll go to questions.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2, and you will be advised when to ask your question. Okay, so our first question comes in from the line of Thomas Sazel, calling from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Paul. Three questions, if I may. On home, it seems that most of your actions had impacted the claim side, while the average premium seems to be down year on year. And so I wonder if you could give some color why it is so difficult, not only for Direct Line, but for the whole market, to reprice for the obviously higher claims cost. Is this related to the increase in price comparison penetration, or what is the key driver here? That's the first question. Second question is on those impairment charges. To what extent does this imply that you expect lower profitability going forward, or are those impairment charges more related to, you know, technical stuff not coming through as you planned? I would like to have some color, if possible, on that one. And finally, on reinsurance, I wonder if you had by now more clarity how reinsurance costs will change on motor in particular for next year. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. John's going to take all three of these,
yeah,
I think.
Thomas, morning. So we'll start with home. As you say, yeah, we are encouraged by the results we're getting from the actions we've taken across pricing, but it wasn't just pricing, of course, it was claims and underwriting. And in combination, those seem to be working better for us. But you're right, the home market remains highly competitive. That is partly due to distribution channels. PCWs are still growing. Although I would say that we're pleased, and NatWest and RBS are pleased with the progress they're making with us in their channel. So I don't think the bank channel is at all in terminal decline. It's battling back, but nevertheless, it's still true that PCWs are growing. And we're trading quite adequately on PCWs, so we're not too dissatisfied with that. Obviously, in our case, average premium can be affected by risk mix, and we've seen that before. And we'll obviously update that. We don't do that every quarter. We'll update that at the year end. In terms of pricing versus claims inflation, in our case, you know, having taken the actions, obviously some pricing is going through, not quite enough. We always said that we thought, because of the competitive conditions in this market, maintaining very, very, very healthy loss ratios, which we've had for many years, would be tough. But overall, I think things are coming through more or less on track for us, and we're back on track, and we're happy with where we are. On impairment, no, we don't think this will have an effect on our profits going forward. Obviously, we're not happy that we've invested in something that's not good, quite good enough, and we have to rework. But we can do that rework within the envelope of spend that we've been talking about for a while, at 80 to 100 million for the next couple of years to the end of 2019. And we're not changing any of our targets for the future. So the answer is not. And finally, on reinsurance, it's going to be interesting, or it is already interesting discussions this year with reinsurers. Obviously, for them and for us, we have to look at how Ogden settlements will settle, not today, but maybe in 3-4 years' time if there's an accident in the next 12 months. So that is going to be an interesting discussion. We go into this discussion with flexibility and a kind of good balance sheet, which means we probably have choices about how much reinsurance to get, which bands we want to retain, which bands we want to reinsure. Are there some clever structures that we can do that maybe work for the reinsurers as well as us? So we're not too pessimistic, but yes, clearly they would like some price rises.
So for some players, we have seen 30% increase in reinsurance this half year. Is this, you know, a good ballpark number, or is it coming down because of the recent revision of the Ogden revision, if you want?
I think we're in a negotiation. You wouldn't expect us to show our hand, but I think we've got a good hand to play. We would expect prices to go up, right, but we're debating the level. So there's still several weeks to run on the process.
And there could be some subtleties in the arrangements. They're not quite as simple as they were in previous years.
Sure.
Yeah. Partly because of the uncertainty about the government and where that's going to be.
Yes, of course. Thanks a lot.
The next question comes in from the line of Kamran Hossain, calling from RBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning. I'm just coming back to, I guess, the impairment and the investment. Can you just talk about what the potential of the investment might be over the next few years? How we should kind of think about measuring success on that investment? I mean, is that a lower expense ratio? So just any colour on that would be really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think let me say a few things. I think the first thing is just a reminder that we've been improving our systems kind of throughout this period and continue to do so and launch things. You know, this is not a one-hit wonder. We continue to improve things. I think the fact our current systems, we've improved to the extent we've grown 250,000 policies at good loss ratios over the last year. So we're in a pretty good position. And really, therefore, the investment is to get us into a future position to stay ahead of consumer trends, to continue to grow our businesses, to continue to grow our pricing sophistication, to continue to give customers the experience they want and to deliver more efficiency. And you know that we've got a longer-term target to reduce our cost ratio. So kind of that, we've got a program against that. We've got those targets baked into the new targets, which we updated at the half year. And we're confident we're going to deliver that. I mean, just to put in context, you know, what this impairment is about, you know, we have chosen, as we've done over the last 8 years, to invest in really proven products, working with proven suppliers, and we're well advanced on the build of those products. What's happened this time is that what's, you know, proved a bit harder, and we're reworking how we're doing it, is the connectivity between those systems and the data flows between those new systems and legacy. And that's where we weren't getting the levels of performance that we were looking for, so we decided to rework. We're happy with the way through now. We'll give you more of an update at year end. So we are, you know, it's a small part of our overall change agenda. We've got a good track record, and as I said, this will set us up for years and maybe even decades ahead, which is why we're taking our time to get it absolutely right.
Thanks very much, Sakala.
The next question comes in from the line of Arjan, calling from UBS. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Sergeant Van Veen. A couple of questions, if I may. Firstly, RSA in the 3Q call mentioned that home pricing, that they're seeing signs of that starting to finally now move. So could you comment a bit about sort of price trends in the last few quarters? Secondly, on the frequency, the fact you're calling it out, I assume it's more than one quarter of improving frequency. So can you give a bit more color on that? And at the same time, has there also been any sort of more recent changes in bodily injury? One of your peers mentioned to us that small bodily injury, for example, has been more favorable the last few quarters. And finally, can you just give us an update in terms of when the Churchill reboot is happening? I thought that was in the fourth quarter, and is that still on track?
Yeah, I mean, last one next year, but going very excited by what we're working on in terms of the Churchill reboot. Listen, on motor, let me just tell you, let's give you a little more flavour on motor. So we're pleased with how we're trading given the pricing action that we've taken. We've priced ahead of trended claims inflation, and 2017 is going to turn out, we think, better than that trended view of claims inflation for two reasons. One is obviously we've got favourable post-Ogden reinsurance arrangements, so we've got this, you know, 2017 is very favourable for us on reinsurance. Second is we are seeing 2017 is looking like, across the year, a good year on frequency. We're not trending that yet. We're taking that as a kind of, you know, as a one-off piece of good news. You could trend it because you could say it's linked to the Jackson reforms and Medco and autonomous emergency braking, but we think it's too early to trend that, so we're not. But that's been generally favourable and has acted as a piece of good news. We're still seeing the same accidental damage trends, which are inflationary. I wouldn't demur from saying that we see encouraging trends on small bodily injury as well. So, yeah, 2017 is going to turn out to, we think, be a good year on motor. We're not taking all of that good news forwards in terms of our plans.
Home pricing, yeah. I think we said last time, and it's true this time, home pricing is up a bit, but it's modest, and I suspect it's not quite enough, certainly for the market claims inflation. But it's, you know, it's certainly better than it was for many, many quarters prior to that.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes in from the line of Dhruv Gahlaut, calling from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I have three questions. Firstly, on the UK claim inflation, just following from the last question, could you quantify what that number is, i.e. what's the net of the accidental damage and frequency? I think at half year you still said it was running at the top end of the 3-5% long-term range. Secondly, on the Ogden, as in, is there a timeline? Is anything happening? As in, haven't really heard much on that. And lastly, in terms of impairments, I might have missed if you made any opening remarks, but what is the difference in terms of impairment this year versus what happened last year? What is driving that impairment? Thanks.
Yeah. So, Drew, listen, we're not giving you a number at this stage on claims inflation. What we're saying is that it's certainly going to be a year when it's, unless something remarkable happens, it's going to be better than our long-term trend. But we're sticking our long-term trend in our assumptions still for the outgoing year. So we're treating Ogden and the frequency as kind of one-offs. Ogden, it is you know, clear that the will of the government is to implement this change. The ability of the government to execute that change, and whether it's together with other measures like whiplash or on its own, is still to be determined. We're clearly running out of weeks for this to happen in 2017, so I think that's very unlikely now. But, you know, we think, you know, hopefully this will get moving in 2018. I think the uncertainty about the Ogden timing and whiplash is creating a kind of a market environment where there's a bit more variation of pricing in Q3 from the market and competitors, which is not an irrational thing because people are trying to work out, you know, business we write now, when claims settle, what will be the environment there for Ogden and for whiplash. So it's quite hard to call it. And obviously we have to make some assumptions. So it looks like people are making slightly different assumptions, but all against a backdrop of, we think, a pretty rational market. Do you want to talk about the impairment?
So on the impairment, obviously the context, Dhruv, is the extensive set of changes we're making across a lot of systems, across all our products and brands and channels. The last year, we found some components which weren't going to add sufficient value, and we potentially wouldn't complete, so we wrote those off. It's slightly different this year. We're further advanced, and what we've seen is that some data and connectivity between the new systems and with each other, and also back into our legacy systems, doesn't really meet our expectations on things like speed, agility, cost of ownership, and so on, and generally on performance. So that's a question of reworking. So it's not that we don't need those things. We do need those things, but we need to work them so that they are as good as we expect them to be.
And can I just do a follow-up on this?
Sure.
When were these, I'm assuming these are new investments, right? The connectivity bits, i.e. this was something you must have tried in the last couple of years. Is that right? Or
yes.
Has it been there for ages and now you're just going through some of these things?
No, yeah, I mean, as you build things, you try to, you've got to connect them in with the with
yeah.
each other and with the legacy systems. So yes, I mean, last couple of years is fine, it's sensible, yeah.
Thank you.
The next question comes in from the line of Andrew Crean calling from Autonomous. Please go ahead.
Morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Good morning. Could I ask on two things? Firstly, on the politics, do you expect Ogden changes to be linked into the same bill as the Whiplash changes, which I think were part of the Queen's speech? And secondly, on large bodily injury claims settling this year, where are they settling? Are they settling at -0.75, or are they settling at around 0 to 1%? And how will you deal with that at the full year? Will you call out to us where you're getting a reverse in some of your Ogden reserving because it's settling at a better rate, or will it just go through the mix?
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Listen, we don't know whether they're going to be separate or together. We would rather they were separate because we think there is kind of political consensus on Ogden and we want to get on with that. It's obviously up to the politicians to decide what they want to do. In terms of where we're settling, currently it's kind of still early days. We've had about 20 claims where the rate is a material part of the settlement and therefore we've got a sense of it. And we're probably not out of line with, I think, what RSA said, which is, you know, generally claims seem to be settling around the new range of 0 to 1 rather than, you know, where Ogden is currently set. But as I say, it's still relatively small numbers.
And we'll take away your suggestion there to separate them out and think about it.
Okay. Great, thanks.
The next question comes in from the line of David Bracewell calling from Redburn. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. A couple of questions. One just on the Nationwide deal, which is going to be expiring anytime soon. I know you talked about the premium volumes attached to that, but could you give us any more clarity on the kind of effect it will have on profitability and also kind of competitiveness going forward? Because, of course, that contributes to your fixed expenses there. So I'm just wondering if that will disrupt your competitiveness in the UK home market. And kind of a follow-up on Andrew's question, actually, when you talk about the Ogden claim settling in a slightly better discount rate. At the half year, a lot of your peers have talked about putting through enough rate increase for actually the new Ogden discount rate of -0.75. I mean, is that, do you think the claims which are settling now are somewhere in the region of 0 to 1, is that affecting the kind of pricing? And is that one of the reasons why we're seeing, as you called it, a bit of a slowdown in the rate of increase for motor insurance pricing because actually claims are settling slightly better? Thank you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's quite hard to take the sugar out of the tea of all the input costs, but certainly you've got a situation where you've got a good frequency year, you've got a favourable reinsurance arrangement this year, because of course we're not, it's largely on the reinsurer's bill in terms of the Ogden costs, and then you've got a potential change to Ogden and you've got potential change to Whiplash. So all of those are inputs, and we think therefore the level of rate the market got away in the first half is definitely sufficient for all of that, and therefore kind of unsurprising to see how the market's priced in Q3, albeit with a bit more variation. So, yeah, you're right. There are a number of kind of positive factors which you should judge the pricing in the market against, which is why we're saying the market has been pretty rational. Nationwide, a few things to say on it. First of all, this is kind of not new news for us. It's been a bit later than we thought. But, you know, our plans have been counting on the loss of Nationwide for a while, and therefore all our longer-term targets, reduction in expense ratio, our, you know, DWP targets have all been set in the context of Nationwide going. The actions we've taken to date have been to make sure that we can get the variable costs out of the business, which we're well advanced in doing, and then the contribution to fixed costs, which is really what it was making, because in a partnership, you know, some of the profit goes to the partner. The contribution, the fixed costs is part of our overall challenge of getting our fixed costs down and getting that ratio down. And we have a number of initiatives, to meet that ambition, including the loss of Nationwide. A few things to say on partnerships generally, though, is you know, we have this fantastic partnership with RBS and NatWest, and that's working really well. All the investment that we've put in and work we've done for them to improve the digital journey, to have really fresh propositions, seems to be really working with them. We've renewed our rescue partnership deal with RBS, which is for 5 years, which is really helpful in terms of the volumes. And partnerships can provide profit, they can provide volumes, and they can also provide you know, strategic advantage, and that's why we're very active in the motor manufacturer marketplace, where we want to do partnerships with motor manufacturers, because we think that's strategically important. So partnerships are very much a part of our future and a part of our plans, and we're doing pretty well in them, actually. As I said before, I think the loss of Nationwide is a reflection of, you know, historic factors rather than kind of where we're at today in terms of our capability. It's a bit of an ad there for partners there. But, yeah.
Thanks.
The next question comes in from the line of Greg Patterson, caller from KBW. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are
you? Hey, Greg.
Very good. I wonder, I mean, you spoke about rates and mix in the home, and you look reluctant to give some explicit numbers. I wonder if you could talk us around what sort of rate and mix has been achieved in motor. That's question one. The second one is, I was wondering to what degree this impairment and whatever you learned from that, to what extent it will delay the implementation date of your new UK motor IT platform. And then the third question is, I believe in the somewhere during this process of impairment, you've decided to no longer use an internal development team and have gone towards an external vendor. I wonder if you could tell me who that I believe you announced, and I didn't pick it up, though. Could you tell me who that external vendor is and why you decided to go external versus internal?
Yeah, so let's start. I mean, in terms of we've decided to be less exhaustive in our disclosure on our pricing movements in the odd quarters, Greg, just because we were over-disclosing, and it's slightly competitive in it. What I can say is we are certainly the right side of the line in terms of us pricing the even the long-term trended claims inflation. In terms of mix, I mean, not particularly new trends, but improving mix in terms of reducing mix risk mix. We'll revert to more disclosure on that at the full year.
The mix is still down, right? Negative impact.
Yes, absolutely. So the AVP doesn't do justice to the pricing we've achieved. So we've achieved more pricing than is implied by the similar to H1, but we're not going to give explicit disclosure at the odd quarters. So that's a positive, Greg. In terms of the program, a few things. Yeah, listen, we continue to work with a number of vendors, you know, we don't choose to disclose who those are and change from time to time, but we continue to work with people that are have got good experience of delivering these programs and these packages globally. And, you know, the good news, these are all proven products, right, that work together with each other in other insurers around the world, and we are tapping into the right experience to make sure that we learn from that. So this is not kind of greenfield, this is not us coding completely new systems out of the blue. This is, we're working with people who know what they're doing. You, I think, referred to this as a kind of motor IT program. The bit which we impaired is only a bit of our total overall change program, and it doesn't just relate to motor. And I think this on the timing, we've kind of decided that we can take our time to get this absolutely right, because as of today, we are really competitive in the market. We're winning market share at good loss ratios. And part of that is testament to the fact that we haven't been sitting still on our systems to date. You know, our digital experience is really good. We win awards for customer experience right now. So we have somewhat the luxury of taking our time to make sure this is absolutely right, recognizing that we're building systems for many years ahead. So we don't feel uncompetitive now. We'll give you a sense of the sequence of what will come out, and this is not one big burst. As our approach is to all systems, we continue to release things in stages, in phases, and therefore we will give you a sense of what those future phases are at year end.
Just trying to understand the logic. I mean, my understanding is that Guidewire, for instance, example is being the modules you're using are being implemented by a team internally and you've switched to an external team. Is that a cost? Is it cheaper or just basically the internal team wasn't done?
We do these things in the right way for us and in the most effective way, and we'll use the people who are best able to do that.
We're not going to get into the weeds here, but you know, we work with the right people, and you know,
I'm just speaking to the IP, the internal IP in the company. I mean, that's obviously something one pitches as a positive or negative for various companies. So I'm just trying to understand, or maybe the top management suddenly decides he's not happy with his own internal IP. I mean, is that not a bad point? So this is just what I'm trying to get to. Trying to understand your thinking.
Yeah, I don't think it's about IP. All what we're saying is bringing these systems together has been done many times before, and we continue to tap into people that have got that experience. So, you know, I don't think there's...
Our IP is all our data and all our great people who do pricing and propositions and marketing. All that's entirely our own, and it's a continuing set of teams and experience we've got.
And the other way of thinking about it, Greg, is these we're buying packages, proven packages. What we build within those packages, the products that we build, the pricing models that we build, that is where the IP exists. And actually, that build's gone pretty well. So that's not really what we're talking about here. This is purely kind of the linkages and the data into play to make sure that we've got not only the performance we need now, but actually in a few years, change systems quickly, and that the MIPage and the amount of data and processing we consume is affordable. So really, the IP actually, I think, you know, a lot of it does fit in the how we build the packages and the products and the pricing algorithms that we build within them rather than the products themselves.
Ben, sorry, this is a sneaky question. You've spoken in the past about getting a non-correlated pricing team in, certain footprint in motor, for instance, that you, for some reason, are not pricing and you'd like to price. Has there been any progress in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. That's moving ahead well. Again, we'll give you an update at year end. But, I mean, you know, we at the half year, we set out a number of initiatives, which are a subcomponent of the conversation are much more than the bit we've just talked about. So, again, medium term, yeah, we do see alternative pricing as a big opportunity. We're progressing really well with it. We're excited about it. Again, we'll give you more updates on that. And again, that just shows you the specific rework that we're talking about is just a component of a much bigger program on many different frontiers. Including alternative pricing that's moving ahead to plan and to expectation.
Perfect. Thank you.
The next question comes in from the line of Wajat Rizvi. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. This is Wajat from Deutsche Bank. I'm afraid I have a couple more questions on impairment charge again. So just wondering, is the impairment charge in 2016 and 17 both related to a specific system or platform you're using, or is it more broad-based and you have just decided to take it in lumps? And secondly, does it mean you would need to keep investing for longer or invest more to get that right speed of connectivity, which you didn't really achieve with these investments? Thank you.
Yeah, I think I've already answered those, actually, to be honest. I think what we said is we're doing a broad-based set of programs, and yes, where it hasn't gone perfectly is not down to one thing. It's down to a few things. And in this particular case, it's down to connecting things together. In terms of will it cost us more? Well, we said we're going to spend a certain amount. We said 80 to 100 million over the next couple of years. So this is not going to change that. And I think we've answered that one already as well.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, let's get some more questions.
Okay, the final question comes in from the line of Dom calling from Exane. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Just one question left for me, and I promise it's not about impairments, but it is on Ogden. We've known for some time now the government is looking at 0 to 1% as a proposal. As you've said, it's... you know, highly unclear whether that will arrive and when it arrives. But thinking about the scenarios, are you able to give us any sense of what, A, the reserve release might be at 0 or at 1% for yourselves, and, B, what you think the market price impact might be at either end of that range, just to give us some sense of that. Thanks.
Yeah, let me do this. The market thing. I mean, all we can say is that we've said that the change down to minus 0.75 was probably kind of growth 6 to 7, I think roughly 6 to 7%. So you can do your own maths. It's obviously not linear, You can do your own maths at what the answer might be at different stages. Just to restate, zero, the government's proposal, they don't know the answer between zero and one. There's quite a lot of subjectivity even when they set out the guidelines about where the rate actually settles, depending on the basket of investments that they choose. So, and zero and one are quite different. But, John, do you want to talk about
that? So we're doing some work because we know people will want to know those sensitivities updated, and we'll do that for you at the year end. But some things to think about. First of all, obviously, since we first showed the impact, which was at the year end, we've had a release from Ogden reserves at the half year of about 50 million, which you know about. That will obviously have some impact. Then we've had some settlements. Paul said we've had about 20 settlements so far with a rate that's been part of that settlement. So that will have an impact. Thirdly, obviously general changes in our BI reserves, which tend to be down, will also have an impact on that sensitivity. So it's a good question. We will update it at the year end. We haven't quite got the answer right now, but we'll give you that.
Thank you.
Good. Any more questions?
We currently have no further questions coming through, so just one final reminder. It's star one on your telephone keypad if you would like to ask a question. Okay, we do have one last question coming through from the line of Andrew Crean calling from Autonomous. Please go ahead.
Sorry about this. PPOs is what I wanted to ask about. We've seen from the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries a continuing fall in the propensity of PPOs, and obviously with Ogden either at minus 0.75 or 0-1, they're likely to be less used. Could you talk a little bit about your experience and talk about your capital sensitivity to a lower assumed PPO rate?
I don't think your propensity clearly has come down. It was coming down actually before all the noise about Ogden. And we adjusted our assumptions. I think we talked about that at the time of the Ogden hit. We don't have any more to say today. I imagine we'll try and say something again maybe at the year end. On the other hand, it might depend on what's happened with Ogden. If that's still out there as uncertainty, we may simply say we simply don't know. I think the challenge you had last time for us, I think, which was could everything move to PPOs, seems like that's not going to happen. And on capital, I don't have an answer right now. It's quite a complicated set of things. It depends on what the Ogden rate is. And it's different when Ogden rate's negative, when Ogden rate's positive. So I think I'm going to leave that for now, and maybe we can come back to that.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Very good. Any more questions?
We do have a question coming in from the line of Paul Walsh. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I understand it's been mentioned once or twice in previous questions, but can I just to clarify on terms of Ogden, have you changed your assumption about the Ogden rate since the Ministry of Justice report came out, and how has this affected your reserves?
So I'll answer that in a slightly obscure way, and we're always slightly cagey about how we talk about we talk about pricing. From a reserve point of view, nothing's changed, and that we still have the minus 0.75 assumption in our reserves. In pricing, we do have to have some risk-weighted assessment of future claims trends, including whiplash and Ogden. And so it has to be somewhat in our thinking, because we write a policy now, the claims may well settle in a few years' time. So we have to have a view of it, but we're not saying it's not mechanical, and we're not saying that the percentage of that which was put into our pricing. But it's obviously a consideration. I hope that helps, Paul.
Thank you.
There are no further questions coming through.
Right. Well, thank you, everyone, for your questions this morning. Listen, we're really pleased with how we've traded this quarter. Good momentum on our own brands, up a third of a million policies at good margins. We've got quite a busy year end from all the topics which we discussed this morning. We look forward to speaking to you on that at the end of February, if not before. So thanks very much for your time.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's call, and you may now replace your handsets.